Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the 1001 Films Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Gardner, and today we're going to be talking about one of my childhood favorite films and a Steven Spielberg classic, Jurassic Park, starring Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, Richard Attenborough, Wayne Knight, and Samuel L. Jackson. I'm going to give you my full review and thoughts right after the break, so let's get to it. So this film has a special place for me because, like I said, it's one of my childhood favorites. And one of my earliest memories of watching movies is watching Jurassic Park on a VHS tape where it was recorded off of TV. So I watched a lot as a kid off of that VHS tape where we just recorded a showing of it when it was on TV. You know, a few years after it was released or whatever. And I probably watched it unedited, I probably watched it edited like that off of TV for, you know, years, maybe a decade. And I had seen that TV version of it so many times. I think the first time that I watched it unedited was my freshman year of college. I just was, had gotten back from Brazil, and I just wanted to get back into watching movies and rewatching some of my childhood favorites and seeing how I felt about them, you know, now that I had more life experience and was an older adult. So the first time I watched this film unedited and not that TV version off of that VHS tape was my freshman year of college. And I mentioned in a recent episode that, you know, movies can hit you differently throughout your life, depending on your life experiences and how old you are and, you know, just you're in a different place, in a different situation in life. And this film is a good example. You know, when I was a kid watching that VHS tape, I loved the dinosaurs and I loved the action and I just loved, you know, I loved that it was so fast paced and that, you know, it never really let up and that, you know, I got to see what it would be like to see dinosaurs in real life. And that's what I loved about this movie. And even, on that VHS tape, I used to fast forward through the opening scene because, you know, the opening scene with the game warden and the raptors, but you don't really ever see the raptors. And that guy gets pulled through the game warden's arm, like into the cage. And you can just imagine what happens to that guy in there with those raptors. And that scene really scared me when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. So I used to fast forward through that scene and just jump right in, right after that. But now, I kind of appreciate the deeper themes of like, ethical issues of biotechnology and capitalism and the blindness of hubris and, you know, man versus nature, you know, science versus nature, man versus animal, like all those themes just flew right over my head when I was a kid. I didn't catch any of that until I had rewatched it when I was a freshman in college. You know, and it has this, movie has similar themes to Jaws and even going back to, you know, things like Moby Dick, like this theme of man versus nature, like has been a theme in all types of storytelling and in all types of media, you know, for centuries, essentially. And this film is no different. And this, you know, I mentioned Jaws before, I think, maybe I didn't, but this film has similar themes to Jaws. You know, in my review of Jaws, another Spielberg movie, I think I mentioned, you know, that whole Moby Dick comparison where it's man versus nature. And this film even has the opening sequence is similar to Jaws, where in Jaws, the girl goes into the water and, you know, you kind of see her from the shark's perspective looking up, you know, from underneath the water. And you get that kind of that same vibe where you see in the cage, from the raptor's point of view, looking at all these people, you know, sticking the cattle prod shockers like in there to try to control them, and like, you know, stuff goes wrong and someone gets eaten by the monster. That really sets the tone for the rest of the film. Those scenes are parallel in Jaws and Jurassic Park, both directed by Steven Spielberg, you know, two decades apart. But it hits the same beats and it has the same feeling, and hits the same notes, of like, you know, it really tells you right from the beginning what's going to happen at the end, you know, that nature is going to win, that nature is going to take over, and that man cannot control nature no matter how hard he tries. It's just not going to happen. And Jeff Goldblum as Ian Malcolm is really the first one to kind of bring up this idea, this question of ethics, you know, in the dinner scene after everyone has gotten to the park, after all the characters have gotten to the park and seen the dinosaurs, they go back to like the main visitor center or whatever. And they have this dinner scene where they're all talking about what they just saw, what they just witnessed of, you know, these real life, you know, dinosaurs, in this park. And Jeff Goldblum's character, Dr. Ian Malcolm, says things like, you know, the lack of humility before nature that's being displayed here staggers me. You know, this level of control that you think you have is not possible. You know, and Jeff Goldblum's, I'm going to talk about Goldblum's performance in a minute, but in this scene particularly, just the way he's talking and he's like hitting the table to like emphasize his point that, you know, it's not, you know, it's not possible, like, it's not possible for man to control nature, and, you know, really pointing the finger at John Hammond and at the lawyer, like, you know, you were so focused on trying to figure out if you could do this that you didn't stop to think if you should do this. You know, you've packaged it and you've, you know, slapped it on the side of lunchboxes and you're promoting it. And it's really, Jeff Goldblum's character particularly is really pushing this narrative of like, you know, capitalism and, being able to profit off of science is not, it's not always the answer. It's not always the best thing to do. Just because you can make money off of it doesn't mean that you should. And the fact that your greed and your hubris has blinded you to this fact is the real issue here at this park. You know, and in that same scene at the dinner, the others kind of jump in and also question the ethics and the safety of it. And like I said, the lawyer kind of represents, you know, capitalism as a whole, you know, like, oh, we could charge $2,000 or we can charge $10,000, and people are going to pay it. And all this guy sees is dollar signs. You know, he doesn't care about like the ethical science issues of, you know, cloning and, you know, resurrecting these extinct species. Like, he doesn't care about any of that. He's just like, how much money can we make off of this? So I was like, oh, maybe we could have a coupon day or something, you know, because John Hammond questions him like, I want this park to be available to all people, not just the uber rich. But even that, like the throwaway line of like, oh, maybe we could have a coupon day. Like, the lawyer doesn't care. He doesn't care about what Hammond cares about, which is, he genuinely wants to spread joy and give joy to children to see dinosaurs in real life. That's his end goal. But the lawyer's end goal is like, I don't care. I don't care about the ethics. I don't care about giving children joy. I just want the money. You know, and we see what ends up happening to him. He's the first one to get killed. He's the first one to get eaten. You know, so he like I said, he represents capitalism, and that's not necessarily the answer to all problems. And another thing that Hammond says in this scene that he keeps repeating over and over and over throughout the film is he keeps saying, "We spared no expense." You know, and this idea of, sparing no expense and having the best of the best, and the fact that something costs money, or that the expensiveness of a thing makes it better than something that is cheap, that is also a theme that goes along with the capitalist themes of the lawyer, that just because something costs a lot of money, or is very hard to do, or is very expensive, doesn't necessarily mean it's the best thing. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's safe, and that it is a proper thing to be consumed by the public at large. And that is something that is explored throughout this film. And something that, you know, like I said before, just completely went over my head as a 10-year-old when I was watching this film. And later, as the film progresses, and after, the dinosaurs escape, and there's that amazing scene with the stopped, SUVs, and the T-Rex gets out and is like attacking everybody, and the lawyer gets eaten. After all of that, when Laura Dern's character comes back to the visitor center and Hammond is there, you know, eating the ice cream. In that ice cream scene, he talks about this flea circus that he had, and it was the first kind of attraction that he built as an entrepreneur in this theme park kind of world. After all of this, he still has the hubris of thinking that, oh, next time I'll have control. Next time I'll be able to do this and that. And Laura Dern is just like, you just don't get it. Like, you never had control. It was always the flea circus, you know. Hammond expresses this idea that he had this flea circus that, you know, he had all these kind of mechanical devices, like a little trapeze and a seesaw and a merry-go-round and all of that. And people would come up and see and say, like, oh, I see the fleas, I see the fleas. But they're all mechanically operated, you know. There's not actually any fleas in the flea circus. It's just mechanical operated, like, apparatus that kind of gives you the illusion that there's fleas there. And he wanted to build Jurassic Park because he wanted to give people something that wasn't illusion, like there's actual dinosaurs. He wanted there to actually be fleas at the flea circus. But Laura Dern is confronting him and saying, like, you know, that's the illusion. The illusion is the fact that you thought that you could control these dinosaurs, that you could control these species that, you know, Dr. Malcolm said earlier, nature had selected out, had selected to be extinct. And you're kind of messing with this whole process. And the illusion is that you have control. It's that the flea circus in Jurassic Park is the exact same thing that, you know, that Laura Dern is kind of presenting to John Hammond in this ice cream scene, that the illusion was that you had control and you never had control. And this theme of, you know, man not having control of nature is like I said before, it's a theme that has run throughout history, through literature and through plays, and, you know, dating back to even Moby Dick. Like I said, that, you know, man cannot control nature. Man does not, has the hubris to be able to say that I can control nature and I can play God, but, you know, they really can't. And that's definitely seen in this film. And another thing I want to hit on is the performances. And the first one that sticks out is Richard Attenborough as John Hammond. You know, I love Richard Attenborough. One of my favorite movies is The Great Escape. He plays Big X in The Great Escape, and it's one of the best performances of his career. And in this movie is probably his most famous performance. You know, he plays this kind of jovial, like Santa Claus even looking type figure. who, like I said, just genuinely wants to bring joy to children and, you know, to the child in all of us. You know, what kid doesn't like dinosaurs? You know, what kid didn't like what adult didn't like imagining and, you know, learning about and playing with, you know, dinosaurs when they were a kid? You know, we all have that. And I don't know what it is about dinosaurs, but every kid loves dinosaurs. All of us loved, you know, learning and reading about and playing, you know, with dinosaurs when we were kids. And that's what Hammond really wants to tap into with this park. And I think that's what makes this film in general appeal to a lot of us. You know, I think Steven Spielberg really understood that everybody likes dinosaurs. You know, everybody as a kid loved to play and learn with, you know, about dinosaurs and everything. And I think he kind of channels that, channels that part of us into Hammond. And Hammond really is the one kind of pushing that, that idea and that kind of nostalgic feeling about dinosaurs out into the movie and out onto us as, you know, as an audience. And like I said before, the other performance that really stands out is Jeff Goldblum as Ian Malcolm, and just his laugh. And I'm not going to try to imitate it, but you can go look it up. Just his laugh in the helicopter at the beginning is so iconic. It's so funny. And I think this performance, and also his performance in The Fly are the ones where he's really the most Jeff Goldblum-y. You know, he has all those kind of like quirky, like mannerisms and like, you know, like I said, the laugh and all of that. Like, he's the most Jeff Goldblum-y in this film, probably besides, The Fly. So I would say The Fly, Jurassic Park, and then, Thor Ragnarok. I think that's the whichever Thor movie that he's in. I can't remember. I think it's Thor Ragnarok. Those three performances, he's just being Jeff Goldblum. You know, he's not really performing. He's just being his weird, odd, quirky self. And then there's Wayne Knight and Sam Jackson, and they're great supporting characters, you know. And ultimately they end up being, you know, kind of dinosaur fodder. They end up just getting killed by, you know, they're a more advanced version of, you know, the teenagers in like a slasher film. You know, they're just there to get killed, but they're there for so long and their characters are so developed, that you really feel for them. And it's really more of an emotional hit when they end up being dead. And this, their deaths kind of harken back to, something that Francis Ford Coppola said about the deaths in the Godfather films, is that for a death to have meaning and to be memorable, it has to have a specific detail that makes it memorable. So, you know, when Luca Brasi gets killed, it's the stabbing of the knife in the hand, and then the changing of the color of his face when he's getting choked from behind. You know, it's the, you know, and in this film, it's the dinosaur that spits the acid in Wayne Knight's face and then eats him while he's in the car. And then it's the disembodied arm of Sam Jackson that kind of falls over Laura Dern when she goes to reset all the systems in that kind of maintenance shack or whatever. And those details of their deaths really make it memorable, make them memorable and more iconic. And, you know, what else can I say about their performances? You know, Wayne Knight was in the middle of Seinfeld. You know, Seinfeld started in 89 and it ended in 98. And this movie came out in 1993. So he was doing Seinfeld before and after this film came out. So it was kind of like an interesting, different role to see him. I mean, he is kind of a villain in Seinfeld, but he is kind of like a villain in this film too. You know, he creates that tension between the other characters. And Sam Jackson, I mean, what else can I say about him? He's an excellent actor. He's been in everything, but at this time, in his career. It was before Pulp Fiction, so I don't really know if he was like a huge star yet. I mean, he had a really small part in Goodfellas, which came out 3 years before Jurassic Park. But, you know, his performance is just, you know, completely believable. You know, just like the chain smoking, like right down to the filters and the hold on to your butts and like his death. Like, it's an iconic role for him. And it's one of my favorites of his. Another thing that really makes this movie great is the special effects. You know, some of them still hold up to today's standards. You know, I just rewatched it just a few minutes ago. I just finished rewatching it. And, you know, the dinosaurs throughout this whole movie, they look real. It's, you know, like I said, it's better than even some of the movies that come out today or have come out recently. I mean, you know, and a lot of that is due to the mix of CGI with animatronics. You know, that's what a lot of movies don't get nowadays, is that, you know, just because you can do something in post, like, and, you know, with CGI and everything, doesn't mean it's going to make it look more real or feel more believable. You know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And just because it can be done on computers doesn't mean it's going to make it look better. There's kind of that, like, that uncanny valley where, like, in our minds, like, we can tell when something's not real, even though it looks real, and may approach kind of reality. There's just something in our brains that just tell us, like, there's some, like, you know, that thing doesn't move right, or it seems unnatural, and you can't really explain why, but you can just feel it within yourself that it's not real. And that's, you know, a lot, that's an issue with a lot of movies that are very heavily CGI nowadays. But the fact that they have, in this film, they kind of narrow that uncanny valley with the mixture of CG and practical effects. And sometimes you can't even tell which is which. And the best scene that kind of displays that is the scene that I mentioned before, is the first scene with the T-Rex when the SUVs are stopped and, you know, he kind of gets out of the fence, and like, that's the first time you really see like fully a T-Rex, and it's just incredible and amazing, and it all looks real. And it's just due to like the little details of like the shrinking pupil when the girl shines the light in the eye of the T-Rex. You know, you can see the pupil contract, and like the blowing of the breath of the dinosaur just blowing off Sam Neill's hat. It's just little details like that that just make it feel more real. And even later in the kitchen scene, which is another incredible scene with a lot with a mix of practical and CG, when the raptor's breath kind of fogs up the glass and stuff like that, you know, like you can't, it just makes it seem more real. Just little details like that make the dinosaurs feel more real, and it makes the situation feel more realistic. And that's just something that has kind of been lost with the idea of CG, you know, being so prevalent. I just have a few more things that I want to touch on, and then I'll wrap up. I want to mention Steven Spielberg's year in 1993 is probably one of the best years a director ever had in the history of film. You know, Jurassic Park is a perfect summer blockbuster, popcorn chomping, you know, movie. But in that same year, he also released Schindler's List. And that is, you know, is like an epic, historical, you know, like heavily emotional Oscar contender. And like these two movies perfectly represent both sides of Steven Spielberg's career. You know, the fun, you know, action-packed popcorn, you know, summer blockbuster movie, and then the heavy emotional Oscar contender based on historical events type movie. You know, like he'll make movies like the BFG, but then he'll make Bridge of Spies, or he'll make Ready Player One, and then he'll have a movie like Lincoln. You know, they're two completely different sides of his career. And it's perfectly embodied in these two films that are all-time greats, but for completely different reasons. You know, Jurassic Park and Schindler's List are probably two of, like, the top 100 movies ever made. And they're from the same director in the same year, but for their all-time greats for completely different reasons. And the fact that Spielberg can shift gears like that throughout his career to make these heavy, like, historical dramas, but also make these really fun, like, popcorn flicks that, that, you know, kids can watch and enjoy, and, like, has, like, this broad appeal. I think it makes him one of the best directors of all time, and you have to put him in that discussion just because of, like, the variety of films that he makes and the fact that he's been so prolific for the last almost 50 years. You know, he started directing in the 70s, you know, with Jaws, and you know, he made a TV film named called Duel. You know, he started in the 70s, and he's been coming out with films, like, it seems like at least one or two a year since, and he's just so prolific and has such a great variety of films that I think he has to be in the discussion for the greatest director of all time. And also in that discussion of the greatest of all time is John Williams. You know, he does the score here. He's done, you know, dozens of scores for Steven Spielberg. You know, they collaborate all the time. And I mean, what else can I say about John Williams? You know, he has 42 or 52 Oscar nominations. You know, he's the second most Oscar nominations for any individual. And he's only 7 behind Disney, Walt Disney, who has 59. You know, he's just, he always gives, you know, great scores. He's the best of the best of all time. You know, and he really uses music to tell the story in this film. It's, one of his best and most memorable scores. But I just have to mention him just out of pure respect. So I guess just my overall thoughts, is that the action scenes work. They're really exciting. They're thrilling. They're scary. The ethics of science versus nature, you know, man versus animal, and that kind of thing, work here. And they kind of provide a backdrop to all of that action that it gives the action more purpose. And that's an element that's really missing from a lot of films, and especially the sequels in this franchise. You know, I wish it wasn't a franchise. I wish franchises weren't a thing, almost, because a lot of times the sequels just mimic the surface of what made the original film great, you know, and that kind of science versus nature, you know, ethical discussion that provides a backdrop for the action in this film is what's missing from the sequels, especially the Jurassic World sequels. I mean, they're fun and they're exciting, but there's no substance to them. They're not deep at all. They don't have any of these kind of discussions about what is the ethics of recreating dinosaurs and, you know, putting them in an amusement park. You know, they're all action and no depth. You know, like I said, they imitated the surface. And, you know, I just wish they would make films that would, you know, would not be afraid to dive into these deeper topics, but also have exciting action. You know, it's just cheap thrills in a lot of these action films today. But not in Jurassic Park. I mean, and that's what really sets it apart from all of these other action films and all of the other films in the series. It's just one of the best movies ever made. You know, those are my thoughts. That's my review. Thank you guys so much for listening. I really enjoy doing this. I'm going to try to keep doing it on a regular basis. these longer episodes too. I really love getting really deep into a film and giving you my thoughts on the whole film from start to finish, and really getting deep into the emotions and the filmmaking aspect of each of these films. Thank you again so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe for new episodes. Check me out on Twitter at SMG Reviews and at my blog at 1001filmblog.wordpress.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will catch you next time.